Hello, everyone, and welcome to Qualitative Conversations, a podcast of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group of the American Educational Research Association. I am Jessica Luster, the current chair of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group. In this podcast episode, I'm joined by an international research collective. What you'll experience as a listener is perhaps summed up best in the word disruption. You'll experience the disruption of really the taken for granted, even of how a podcast is supposedly meant to unfold. You'll hear unexpected silence, unique sounds and noises, and other unexpectedness. This research collective includes Angelo Benozzo, a senior lecturer in organizational behaviors at Norwich Business School, the University of East Anglia, Neil Carey's research focuses on creative and arts-based methods in social science research. The collective also includes Constance Elmhurst, who describes herself as a phenomenon of human and non-human materiality, who again and again emerges as a woman, a mother, a teacher, a friend, a politician, an activist, and in space-time matterings. The collective also includes Nikki Fairchild, who is a senior lecturer in early childhood education and care. Mirka Coria Youngberg is also part of this collective. Mirka is a professor of qualitative research at Arizona State University. And finally, the collective also includes Carol Taylor, who is a professor of higher education and gender and the Department of Education at the University of Bath. So welcome. I hope you enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Qualitative Conversations, a podcast series hosted by the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group of the American Educational Research Association. I'm Jessica Luster, the current chair of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, and I'm happy to be joined today by an international 6-member research collective. They'll be speaking with me about their collective work within qualitative inquiry. Before they introduce themselves, I want to share with you a bit about how they came to be, and I'm reading from a script that they shared with me. We met 3 years ago at a workshop conference event, laughed, related, made, wrote, published. And we still do. Oh, the places we go. Gender and Organization Conference, Post-Qual, Kiel, Sweden, Leuven, Illinois, Edinburgh, London, New York, and more. Always together, sometimes in person, sometimes virtually. We are in bags, under tables, on arms, hanging from the ceiling, on the floor, making, doing, being, becoming. Together and with others, we have aimed to find ways to produce post-qualitative interventions which provoke, experiment, and disturb. So we see our collective as coming together to disrupt conference in all spaces through play and human, non-human relations in ways which are experimental, productive, disturbing. We wonder what it does to us, the material and human participants. We consider academia as our playground, and conference participants, readers, and scholars of our work as our collaborators in their playfulness. Such play work is serious. It is planned. It is productive. It gives free rein to our passions. The play is in the unfolding of the event. Disturbances surprise, trans, and generate possibilities. Our collective is cut together, apart, and continually producing. We are more than the sum of our parts. Beautiful. So to get us started, if you could each introduce yourself and tell us from where you're coming. Angelo, we'll start with you.
I'm Angelo, and I used to live in Italy until 2 months ago. Now I'm in the UK, and I work at the University of East Anglia, Norwich Business School, as a senior lecturer in work and organizational psychology. Okay, that's all.
Hi, and my name is Neil Carey. I am based in Manchester in the UK, and I continue to be, and with this group, interested in querying what and how we claim to know.
Hi, I'm Constance. I'm from Norway, I'm a kindergarten teacher.
Hi, I'm Nikki Fairchild, and I'm based in Chichester in United Kingdom. And I'm a senior lecturer in early childhood studies, and part of my part of the collective is play.
And here is Mirka Gorjberg. I'm from Arizona State University. I work and play with qualitative research in its various forms.
Hi, I'm Carol Taylor. I'm from the University of Bath in the United Kingdom. And my title is Professor of Gender and Higher Education, although my work ranges much wider than that. And I'm also interested in the conditions in which we produce knowledge and what actually constitutes knowledge.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. It's really a pleasure. What a group you are. To get us started, can you describe how your collective came to be?
This is almost like a question of origin. Do we have one?
I mean, that's a really good question because
yes,
I dropped in. I just happened to be at a particular conference and I noticed that this stream was going on and I dropped in. And I just found a bunch of people who were doing all sorts of really exciting things. So I left the stream that I'd originally gone to the conference to be with. And I thought, hey, these people are so much more fun. I'll hang around with them for a bit. And 3 years later, look where we are. So it was a totally random event for me in terms of meeting these five people.
And although some of us were organizing the event, it strikes me that the event doesn't really represent that originary moment, because I suspect all of us were doing work that we've continued to do, just in, I suspect, much nicer and in more favorable conditions as part of the collective.
I agree. And I think that even though we met physically 3 years ago, I'd already been reading the work of some of these colleagues and thinking about research in very different ways. So there was almost like an event before we became into being as a collective.
And I think one of the things that we've all really been interested in is this idea of disturbance and how to kind of take a normative structure and deconstruct it, interrogate it, pull it into its various parts, reconstitute it into something entirely different, but also as part of that process to kind of instantiate, if you like, modes of experimentation and play and creativity. So that, I mean, it genuinely is the case that when we start doing something, we really don't know where it's going to end up. And actually, it's both exciting, but sometimes it's a little bit scary as well. But it also takes you into uncharted waters. You don't really know where you're going. And that is that discomfiture, that's not a word, is it? Is a really good thing.
And since we are experimenting and playing, then I dare to do things I normally wouldn't do.
Constance, can you share an example of what that might look like, sound like, be like, to do things that you normally wouldn't do?
Because in a conference, you normally just sit down and you listen to somebody who's having a speech of something, and then you go to something else. So you're always sitting there listening. And when we met, we started doing things instead. And that opened up to dare doing things. Mm-hmm. And then I start speaking too.
So I'm under tables most of the time when we conference, or being under tables. ICQI, I sat under a table at 12 o'clock at night UK time, with most of my family looking at me thinking, what on earth is she doing? But it's that whole notion of connection and production that was really liberating as far as qualitative or post-qualitative research was concerned.
And I think one of the really sort of key moments for me was where we had, I was doing a string figuring workshop, and a sandwich was hoisted on a line, on a fishing line, and it was taken up to the overhead projector near the ceiling. And it was just one of those really sort of surreal moments. But there was a serious purpose to this. The serious purpose was to experiment with where would string figuring as a mode of enacting post-qualitative research, where could it possibly take us? So it took us into all sorts of different and unforeseen directions.
I'm reminded here about our autopsy workshop as well, where it was a real disturbance of kind of normative conference spaces. And it was disturbing in lots of different kinds of ways, not least it there was a threat and a risk around contravening university legalities about having bodies that were not fully clothed, but also in a kind of set of expectations for both ourselves and our participants in how people interacted and intra-acted during the workshop that we did, where we had lots of bodies and images of bodies and ugly textures working in and around ideas of human and the more than human, and a whole series of materials during that workshop.
And I think what is really interesting and cool and kind of intriguing to me about our collective work is the synergy and the difference that we introduce to the work that we do together. And there is something really productive to me to talk across time spaces, talk across gender and disciplines, talk across animal-human boundaries, and not only talk, but do, and how that doing differently and doing across difference kind of feeds into my other scholarship beyond this collective as well, which is a really fabulous thing, I think.
What I really experiment, thanks to this group, it's a kind of generative support, I would say. It's incredible how working together is really productive. I completely agree with Mirka. So we produce together, and when I start to speak with you or doing things, so it's like my brain, my body start to produce, but together with the other, you know. If I were alone, this doesn't happen. And so it's really new for me, really supportive in writing, in going to the conference, in producing something different.
Yeah. I agree with all of that, Angelo, and I think there's something here as well. There is something about having fun, but there's also something I think about having a sense in which we can feel comfortable challenging each other as well. And I think the challenge is really, really important, because I think the challenge is where you push yourself and are pushed into new territory. So that could be new thinking, new reading, new modes of writing, new modes of sitting on a chair or sitting under a table. So all of those being, becoming, doing, writing, thinkings, they all become part of who we are as a collective. And I think one of the really interesting things Neil said when we were last Skyping was that my brain doesn't belong to me. And it's almost as though there are these affective connections which kind of traverse space and time. And it's really, really difficult to say how and why those work. But on each occasion that we're together, whether that's virtually or materially actually in the room together, it seems to work.
And I'm always thinking about the bodily potentials, you know. You don't know what a body's potential is until it comes into contact with other bodies. And for me, that's what the collective does. It's this generative, positive, opening up space, flushing away space, thinking space, that actually really does push and challenge not just ourselves, but we hope other aspects of the Academy as well.
And continuing with that, Nikki, I think that the way that we bring materiality and space together, and that's somehow, I see that that's the some of the stimuli maybe for our disturbances, that many of them are spatial and material in their kind of appearances, maybe in some ways, or eventhood. And how we have found it very productive to bring those things together in order to stimulate different types of thinking in the conference spaces. And how little, I think that some of our work has started because we notice how little materiality is embedded in conferencing or kind of these academic spaces, or at least it's not discussed, or it's not brought to the forefront.
And I think that's absolutely right, Merca. And I think what's really, really interesting is how we often kind of tune into little things at the edges that might often seem to be quite peripheral or ephemeral, but actually once you tune into those things, it's a bit like string figuring. You can pull a thread and then it leads to all sorts of other things, and it's kind of a multiplier in a way. So I think for me, the kind of micro work that we're doing does throw me back in all sorts of interesting ways and gives me a language, a discourse, a material way of kind of critiquing normative sociological accounts of how we produce knowledge. And you know, the little thing that sparks that off could be I don't know, a pen or a bag or a gorilla in the toilets, or a body part or a hand print on the wall. It could be anything, but it's how that then kind of brings all those things together, I think, which is really, really interesting. And I think that's kind of quite unusual as well.
So you've offered several examples, but I'm hoping we can flesh this out further. Can you share two concrete examples of concepts or ideas that you are currently engaged in, and I'll use your language here, doing, writing, thinking with?
I think one of the things that we've talked about quite a lot is around bodies, where bodies begin and how bodies are activated within certain spaces and in relation to certain materialities, but also actually what we mean by bodies. So bodies can be all sorts of things, non-human as well as human. And I think the workshop that we did, trying to remember where it was, in Sweden, Neil, where we had the autopsy table, and Angelo, where you were the body of Christ. So I think those kind of material interventions in what we would loosely call workshop spaces have been really interesting for helping us to look back at the whole Western tradition of, you know, the kind of boundaried enlightenment body, and then think about and do that body from, or those bodies from, a different perspective.
Yes, it strikes me that that particular example also puts into question the body as an object, as something that can be explored, and the autopsy both as a mode of inquiry and as a space in which there's a very long Western tradition of finding out what bodies are, not just on their surface, but in their interiority, as if that interiority was the originary source for what a contained thing called body was. It struck me that in that workshop, which kind of continues a tradition that we use a lot, I think, in our workshops about speculativeness. You know, some of the things that come out of that is, as Carol and others have said, is that that workshop allows, requires, demands, asks us to reconsider, to consider again, or consider in different kinds of ways, not just what bodies are, but how bodies have been shaped through particular kinds of ways of thinking and traditional notions of what counts and what doesn't count as bodies.
I was really fascinated by a concept that we use. It's not a concept, it was an image, also an image, the image of the worm, earthworm, mm-hmm. that we use to construct, the paper related to publishing, gender, work and organization. Through this paper, really we return continually what's happened during that conference and the disturbances that we did. So we really try to plug in this concept, this image within the paper. And this was for me really open up a lot of possibilities in writing.
And I think that in some ways, both our work with the bodies and autopsy, as well as the backs, they were knowledge product. They were knowledge projects, because in a way, back became a imaginary for knowledge, containing knowledge, discarding knowledge, displaying, and all that. So similarly, the body and autopsy became a image of kind of rethinking the death of the man, and rethinking the tools that we and the methods that we are asked to kind of process through or use to process the information. So what happens if we eliminate the man? What happens to the knowledge? What happens if the man is being autopsied and kind of the body is being recovered? or even resuscitated, like brought me back to life, and how that would then translate into knowledge in the conference places, or change that, or somehow transfer that into something else.
I think I was going to say something about how we actually write the papers as well. So we talked a little bit earlier on about the keep returning to, and the whole gender work and organisation paper was around the Barad's concept of return, in terms of Haraway's concept of both cyborg and earthworm. But just to sort of let people know a little bit about how we write the papers. So we write the papers in Google Docs, and we all intervene in the papers, and we all write over each other's work. And it feels to me like we're really, really deconstructing something to do around authorship. You know, it's almost as though by the time we've got to the end of this writing process, which actually is very intensive, incredibly good fun, but actually really, really hard work. But by the time we've got to the end of it, the question might be, so who wrote that bit? And the response is, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because we've all written it. And, you know, there are material traces upon traces upon traces of how that writing got done. And I think the interesting thing then becomes, how do you know a piece of writing is finished? And there's something there about how it feels, how it looks, how it reads. But we use the writing also to kind of work against normative traditions of producing an academic conference article, an academic article. And that's actually really difficult and really challenging, and I think has taken us into quite a lot of new territory as well.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about the post-qual, and how does our work relate it to qualitative mm-hmm. research, because that was one of Jessica's questions. So what do you think? Do we do post-qual, do we do qual, or do we do something else?
I think we maybe do things that resist definition. No, I don't think we necessarily do a particular thing. We can't necessarily define it effectively. We haven't got the words to define it. So maybe we're post-qual, maybe not, I don't know.
I sometimes wonder whether, rather than a post, where might be pre, but then that seems completely inadequate as well, because that kind of sense of periodizing along some imaginary linear scale just doesn't feel quite right either. It strikes me that, going back to the writing, one of the things, as Carol was saying, is that we write over each other, but also we often write with each other. Mm-hmm. So, and that happens in ways where we might write kind of independently, but that is not an independence, because very often we're writing either in the context of the joy that we have had at a particular event, or the kinds of smiles and the legitimacies that we feel in thinking forward into an event. And equally in Google Docs, sometimes we meet each other in unplanned ways as coloured dots in those documents. And that produces a very different kind of writing as well. It's almost as if we egg each other on. It is pre, proto, and post all at once.
And I'm just thinking there, Neil, about some of the notes to self that I put in the docs. But of course, they're not notes to self, they're notes to everybody and whoever might want to pick them up. Or just ignore them, it's entirely up to you. Yeah, no, it's really interesting.
Could you all talk a little bit more about how you see your collective work, speaking to, against, past, you've used the word disturbance a lot, perhaps disturbing the field of qualitative research.
It strikes me that one of the things that I'd like to say about this idea of disturbance is not that it disturbs something that is already very securely positioned, because I think we all probably know that qualitative research is a very loose assemblage of many different things, many different people and practices and traditions. I think that our disturbance is in some ways about occupying spaces and fractures and fissures, about kind of taking advantage and harnessing some of the fold and refolds and the fold backs that are already extant in that very diverse thing that we call qualitative research. I'm always amazed when working with students and they refer to qualitative research as if it were a thing, as if it were a known and knowable thing, as if it were a thing through which one could know and be known.
Yeah. And I think the kind of the phrase post-qualitative, as well as it having a certain sort of linearity that I think that we're probably working to disrupt, I think qualitative research is also, and if you like, this is the sociologist in me coming out late in the day, I think qualitative research has a location and a history which is tied into educational cultures and university cultures in different national contexts in a way. So I think post-qual for me signifies somewhat differently than it probably does for Mirka or for Constanza. And I've had really interesting conversations with Hilevi Lenz-Taguchi about this as well. And I think that this is that there's something really interesting about how those politics of location then kind of work into knowledge production, I mean that in inverted commas, in a post-qual mode in the different locations that we find ourselves in.
And I would also say that the disturbance, I really like the idea that the disturbance is context, location, space specific in some ways. And I feel like more than disturbing others, we are maybe disturbing ourselves. And the kind of enormous potential and creativity which is in that becoming and that organic formation, like how we go about, you know, finding a conference to go to or the new project to start or the new paper to write, it is all kind of really much organic and in flux. And for me, that is a fabulous form of disturbance.
That was easy.
It strikes me that
life is like that, Neil.
Sorry, say that again.
If only real life was like that. It's never quite that easy, is it?
It strikes me that we're being very restrained in this kind of event, even though we're also disturbing it, and we're finding our way into disturbance as well. And we do that in around this kind of technology.
And we're doing it now in this space-time at Ring. We are disturbing again and again.
That was easy.
Can I pick up on something that Mirka said about disturbing ourselves and each other and providing disturbances for each other? And it strikes me that one easy way to read that is that we scare each other a lot. I was going to use bad language there, but I recognized about how it is that we ought normative in particular kind of spaces. But it strikes me that there's something incredibly ethical about the disturbances that we create for each other. And maybe it's something about the ways in which we hold for each other and with each other the disturbances that we carry from other kinds of spaces, the violences of having to be normative in other spaces. We take those into this collective space and they feel okay, they feel lovely, they make me smile. I look around and I see other people in this group smile too, and it allows me to do the same.
Yes, I really agree with you, Neil. Really, yes.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah. And I think that's actually, you know, working in higher education, which sometimes can be an isolating, performative, and managerial and quite cruel space sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, I think it's really, really important to have those spaces where you feel like not just that you can be creative and that you can experiment, but you can actually do things wrong and it's okay. And you're not judged because of that, because, you know, it's not the case that all our experiments have been, you know, massively successful, because they haven't. Some of them just haven't worked, and we've thought about, so why hasn't that worked? What was it about the particularity of, you know, those bodies coming into that space with those materialities at that particular moment? What was it about that didn't work? And we've had to, you know, have some kind of quite hard thinking about that as well. But I think that folds back into the ethics of kind of trying to create a nurturing space in which those critical conversations can be had and can be faced up to. And I think that is actually quite rare sometimes in higher education spaces, particularly in the kinds of higher education, you know, that many of us work within.
Mm-hmm. And that ethic stretches across the collective. I joined the collective as a PhD student, and now I'm not a PhD student anymore, but I feel there's no layers, there's no hierarchies. It really is a true collective experience, and I'm now working with people whose work I've admired for a long time, and I keep having to pinch myself, you know, because it is such a nourishing, supportive community because of these relational connections that we make, either physically or in conference spaces or across continents and time zones. It's a really different space in academia for me. That's from Sweden.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It strikes me that what your podcast listeners won't be able to see is that during this podcast, we have all elected to be able to see each other within the Zoom platform. And one of the things that's happening a lot, and that reminds me when we were brainstorming the idea of concept for this podcast, one of the first things that we came up with was the word smile. Now, I don't know whether that's a concept or not. I don't know how it operates as a concept, but it strikes me that it operates as a practice that is incredibly ethical and incredibly common in our collective here. And I think that nourishes us a great, great deal, more than just making us feel good, although I think it does that. But I think it is also something like a wave that carries what we've done before and what we continue to do Whether that's about going to conferences, whether it's about writing up, or whether it's about sustaining ourselves and each other, kind of in continuing to do the work that we do. So SMILE, I suppose, would be one of the concepts for me that speaks to qualitative research. I wish more qualitative research would make more people smile.
Well, on that note, I'm sure that many of our listeners would really enjoy to access your work further. What's the best way for people to learn more about your work?
Well, a number of us are going to be at ARA in the next month or so. So, you know, it would be great to see people turning up, and it's always good to have chats with people at conferences. So that's one particular way that people could engage with our work.
Wonderful. Are there any readings or recent publications that you would recommend as helpful starting places for people to engage with your playful ideas as a research collective?
Yeah, I think the Banks Choreographies paper is a really nice place for people to start, because that's a very, very playful paper around cutting up bags, reassembling bags, writing poems with bags, doing all sorts of things with bags. Bags really, really sort of mundane, everyday, ordinary items, but how bags can be transformed into, I don't know, post-qualitative assemblage that enables us to think differently. So I think the Bags paper, which was published in Qualitative Inquiry, is a really good place to start. But there's also the Gender Work and Organisation paper that Angelo mentioned before, which is about the academic conference machine.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining me today. It's really been a pleasure to learn from all of you, and I have to say that I've done quite a bit of smiling, more than I've ever done on a podcast recording before. So I appreciate all the smiles that you've offered me today as well. Thank you all for joining.
Thanks so much, Jessica.
Thank you.
The Qualitative Research Special Interest Group was established in 1987 to provide a space within the American Educational Research Association for the discussion of philosophical, ethical, and methodological issues in qualitative research. We invite you to consider joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group today. For members of the American Educational Research Association, the annual fee for joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group for regular, non-graduate student members is $10. And the annual fee for graduate students is $5. As members of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, you will gain access to a network of fellow qualitative scholars, as well as our many activities, ranging from mentoring opportunities to our exciting new podcast series, to updates and news related to recent qualitative publications and jobs. Please visit the American Educational Research Association's website at www.aera.net to join the Qualitative Research SIG today.